Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Patriotic Friday on the Savage Nation. Of course, we are living through anti-American, unpatriotic times with the most unpatriotic, anti-American president in the White House in American history, with communist vermin in the gutters of cities calling themselves heroes, while men taking bullets for freedom are buried as enemies of the state. I decided to play patriotic music all day on Friday. We're not naming it Rock and Roll Friday anymore. It will be Patriotic Friday. And we will begin today with the Washington Post. Let's start it again for those of you who don't know what they're listening to. For those of you who don't know what you're listening to, you're listening to The Savage Nation. We see the Tea Party as patriots and the Wall Street occupiers as vermin. We are a core of listeners who believe in borders, language, and culture. Does that offend you? Then you know where you can go. You can go to Hamas if you don't like it. You can go to Al-Qaeda if you don't like it. You can join the Symbionese Liberation Army if you don't like it. You can join the Biden-Manhoff gang if you don't like it. You can join the White House and the other members of the Weather Underground if you don't like it. But we like it very much. And there's not enough patriotism on the airwaves. You hardly ever hear a patriotic tune, a patriotic reference. People are afraid to say they love America. Well, let me tell you something. I'm still a Boy Scout and I still love America. You might consider me an ultranationalist. Dirty words to those vermin in the gutters of Wall Street and Oakland, California. But beautiful, clean words to me. I hope to you as well. We begin today with the stories of the day on michaelsavage.com, where the so-called occupiers think that they're at war. They believe that they are soldiers for the revolution. And so, my friends, I ask you a question. This week, CNN, the Crescent News Network, dedicated an entire segment of their hot air time to the question, would Jesus occupy Wall Street? And we ask you, do you believe that he would occupy Wall Street? Why or why not? Do you believe this was an appropriate question for CNN to have raised? Why not? Would Moses have occupied Wall Street? Or would Muhammad have occupied Wall Street? Or would Buddha have occupied Wall Street? Are they implying that most of the Wall Street vermin are religious Christians? I kind of doubt it. We know that most of them are atheistic, thrown into a hooskow, thrown into a police cell for 30 days. And yet the police are being told to stand down, to treat them with delicacy. Now, CNN's question was based in part on a statement from a so-called Vatican official in support of the Wall Street vermin. Do you believe that the left has co-opted Christianity to an extent that it can no longer return to what it once was? How have you seen this take place in your own church? These are some of the questions that I would like to explore on the Savage Nation. But I first want to go back to the primary question. Would Jesus occupy Wall Street? It's a very interesting question, especially since it comes from the Crescent News Network, and since they've always told us that we should separate church from state. Here they're bringing church into state policy, trying to imply somehow that Jesus was a communist, or that Jesus was a filthy bum, or that Jesus was a freeloader, or that Jesus was someone who threw rocks at police, or that Jesus was a bum who didn't like to work. None of that is true. So far as I know, and I wasn't there, although I've been around a long time, I really don't go back to biblical days. Could you play Sympathy for the Devil, by the way, while I'm talking? That would have been a perfect entree for I've been around a long, long time. That would have been a nice spot for that one. But although I was not around at that time, we do know a few things. We know that Jesus of Nazareth was a rabbi who didn't like, amongst other things, the money changers in the back of the temple. I'll say amen to that one, Jesus. Jesus also didn't like the immorality that was spreading amongst the Israelites. How many people would agree with that? Jesus didn't like a lot of things, but one thing Jesus was not a communist, I can guarantee you.
St. Petersburg, when I saw it was a time for a change. Killed the Tsar and his ministers, Anastasia screamed in vain. I rode a tank, held a generous rank, when the blitzkrieg raged and the body stank.
Thank you, my friend. Now, he's not singing about Jesus. He's singing about the Occupy Wall Street vermin, who, although they're presenting themselves as peaceniks, we all know that they're hardcore throat-cutting vermin of the type that would look to put you and your family underneath a guillotine if they had the power. And I only wish that I had the power to tell the police, boys, unleash your batons. Boys, get out your Lysol. Boys, unleash the dogs on them. Boys, get those vermin out of the gutters of America, because without law, there can be no order. And if you let these rats proliferate across America, we're going to lose this country, boys. But unfortunately, I am only a talk show host. But getting back to the question, would Jesus occupy Wall Street on the Savage Nation? Well, the answer is quite simple. Jesus was not a communist. He instructed each of us to care for our families, our neighbors, the poor and sick, ourselves, which we do, by the way, in spades through our taxes. Jesus did not instruct us to hand that responsibility over to big government and then tell ourselves that we did the right thing. Government coercion, such as the type practiced by the Democrats and the unions, is not true charity. In fact, high taxation and government programs create an I gave it the office mentality and actually discourages people like you from getting involved directly to help others. Jesus was not a community organizer. He did not come to take on Rome. Barabbas, the murderer, was the community organizer. And Barabbas' followers were the type of mob that you would see in Wall Street. Barabbas would be the hero today of the vermin in Wall Street, not Jesus Christ. Jesus would be assaulted and spat upon by these atheistic vermin. Now, Jesus' anger at the money changers was on behalf of God, not on behalf of the masses. You see, they were defiling God's temple, and that's why Jesus got angry. Jesus would remind all of us, including the vermin in the gutters of Wall Street and Oakland, California, and elsewhere, that theft, rape, violence, bearing false witness, deceit, sloth, coveting, and defecating in the gutter are all sins. Yes, Jesus would probably walk among the occupiers, only because he would walk among anyone, especially the most grievous sinners. He would not have any interest in their absurd political causes, but rather in their eternal souls. However, in the case of the vermin on Wall Street and elsewhere, there are no souls there. There are only atheistic, materialistic bodies. Finally, CNN, Jesus would not appreciate his name and mission being co-opted for such a vain, self-centered, destructive, hate-filled, and envy-driven, godless, anti-American cause. Does that answer your question on the Savage Nation? Let's go back to a little Mick Jagger, as I invite you to call me at 1-800-449-8255. Yeah. I want to save your family. I want you to understand the danger you are in. You have a communist in the White House. I don't care what the media says he is. I don't care what he looks like. I don't care if he's personally a nice guy. I'm sure Lenin had friends. I'm sure Trotsky had friends. I'm sure Trotsky had children. I'm sure Lenin had children. I'm sure that they all smiled to the masses. At the end of the day, they killed people in the masses, in the great numbers. No, we have a communist in the White House. And I want to tell you something else. I do not see the Republicans winning the next election. I have told you the election is fixed. Just as the 1918 or 1919 World Series have been fixed and advanced by Arnold Rothstein, I believe that the Republicans have already thrown the election, just as they did last time. And the reason they threw the election last time by bringing up that doofus McCain to lose it was because, well, you know why, because they had 8 years of Bush. They sacked the Treasury with the war in Iraq and through the contracting process. They sacked the Treasury by expanding government beyond that of the previous four administrations. I'm talking about the Republicans, by the way, not the Democrats. And so they figured you had had enough of them, and it was time for a Democrat. But you see, if the Democrats had run just another Democrat, why, Hillary Clinton or another party apparatchik, you probably would have not gone and voted, and the old hack McCain might have won. So instead, they picked someone no one ever saw before, and he was black. And he was young, and he was charismatic, and he had a beautiful family, and you fell for it, and you took it hook, line, and sinker. Little did you know that you'd have trickle-up poverty and trickle-down degeneracy, but that's what you have right now. And so what are the Republicans doing to show you that they really want to win? Well, they're having one debate after another. So far, the debates have been moderated by the most left-wing fanatics in the American media, by Wolf Blitzer of CNN. By Anderson Blooper of CNN, by leftist haters on MSNBC, and by other leftist outlets. Astounding, isn't it? And yet, the Republicans, who I think are throwing the election to Obama, have said they have scheduled 14 more Republican debates through March of next year. So I ask you, who do you think will be moderating the upcoming debates for the Republicans? Hamas? Perhaps they can invite the leader of Hamas to moderate the next debate. Or they could even go to Gaza to show how inclusive they are. The Republican candidates could fly to Gaza and debate in the Hamas headquarters. Or if they don't want to travel that far, they could go to the despicable halls of the ACLU and have the ACLU moderate the debate. Or perhaps Al-Qaeda would be willing to do it for the Republicans. If not them, there's always the Taliban. If they really want to show how inclusive they are, the Republicans could seek to be moderated by the Weather Underground members of the Obama administration. If that doesn't work for the next debate, if they don't, have not debased themselves sufficiently, if they have not yet looked like fools, they could always go to the Earth Liberation Front for the next debate, or the Symmetes Liberation Army and Alcatraz. They can get the former members of the SLA to release themselves from prison, and they can have them moderate the next Republican debate. And if that is not enough, perhaps the final debate amongst the Republicans can be held in German prisons where the remnants of the Biden-Monhoff gang reside. I shall return on the Savage Nation. Savage.
The question is, would Jesus occupy Wall Street in light of what happened in Oakland, California? Occupy Oakland protesters hurled paint at riot police. Riot police hurled tear gas. Jesus here? Some argue yes.
Lady, when was the last time you were in a church? All of a sudden, they're bringing in Jesus, Christians, and the church into the communist revolution going on in the gutters, spurred on by the communist-in-chief and the union organizers, who are one and the same thing, by the way. They want to take as much money as they can out of the middle class and distribute it to their cronies. That's what this is all about. Make no mistake about it. And so here we are. Here I am back on the radio. I've been off a few days. I had a few issues. Let's put it to you that way. Let it go at that. And I'm back. And we're talking about this stupid question, would Jesus occupy Wall Street? Of course the answer is no. Absolutely not. It had nothing to do with communism. But this is how the left is. First, they hate religion, put down religion, tell you to eschew religion, drop the crosses, drop the Ten Commandments. Don't let anyone pray before a football game. Don't let Marines pray before they go into battle. But all of a sudden, when you got vermin in the gutters of Wall Street and Oakland and elsewhere, they're saying, oh, they're so holy. They're just holy warriors. All they want to do is make sure that the needy get their care. Well, let me tell you what's going on. The fact of the matter is that the chefs, the idiotic out-of-work chefs who were cooking for them in New York, have gone on strike and said, wait a minute, we're not going to make these cordon bleu dishes for these bums anymore. They're working us 20 hours a day, and they're feasting like they've never feasted before. Why should I do this? I'm not being paid. So what they're saying is it's unfair for them to work so hard while others are sitting around playing the guitar and having sex, smoking dope and having a good time. In other words, welcome to the club, chefs. That's how the rest of us feel. Why don't these freeloading bums go out and get a job? You think there are no people listening to this show who had hard times, who overcame them, who worked three jobs and raised children anyway and didn't go in the gutter and start crying like a baby? I'm one of them. I had children and I had no job. And I had no job because of vermin like you who stole my job and gave it to minorities who are unqualified. So don't tell me about an unfair society. What you do is you suck it in, you redevelop yourself, you go back to school and you make something yourself. And if that doesn't work, it's too bad. How's that? Life is unfair. And you were not at Gallipoli to learn that. You didn't learn that life was unfair at in Da Nang. You didn't learn that life was unfair at Gettysburg. What did you learn at a Wall Street protest because they cut off your zucchini in Zucchini Park? How tragic. Go and get a real job, you bums, you. That's what I'd like to say, but the mayors are afraid of them. The only place these vermin have been driven out of the park is in San Diego. How's that? How come that worked so well? 1-800-449-8255. Speaking of work, I worked very hard writing my novel, Abuse of Power, and it's 6 weeks now on the New York Times bestseller list. It's an astonishing political novel. It will be a movie eventually, even if I have to produce it myself. And I want to ask you a question to mix in here with the Does Jesus thing work. I would like to ask you to call this show and read your favorite paragraph on the air. If you get selected by Doug, the call screener, you'll win a free copy of Abuse of Power as a holiday gift. It could be a holiday gift. It could be anything you want. But you have to limit it to one paragraph in Abuse of Power. Also, I'd like to know who is actually reading the book. Men, what's your age? Women, what's your age? Did you buy Abuse of Power as a gift? And who did you buy it for? I'd like to know who is reading Abuse of Power for one reason. People think that it's all white males over the age of 50. I hope it is, but I'm not sure it is. I think a lot of women are reading the book. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. We have outright communist bums in the streets of America being lauded as semi-religious figures along the line of how Obama was held up as some kind of saint. Anyone who hates America enough suddenly becomes glorified by the media, as you well know. Here in San Francisco, things have gotten so bad. The Democrats are so drunk with power. There is so no opposition in California. It's Democrat at every level of government in California. It's gotten so bad that the Democrats are now getting caught shoplifting, driving drunk, and nothing happens to them. For example, today the California Highway Patrol announced that it pulled over Governor Jerry Brown's State Department of Finance Director Anna Matos Santos after her Acura was seen weaving in downtown Sacramento. She's the budget czar for the bankrupt state of California, which of course may explain why she was weaving in her Acura. She was not driving a Chevrolet or a Ford. She was driving an Acura, and apparently she was DUI. She offered to resign, and Governor Brown said, no, you should not resign. Apparently he likes his staffers to weave at 12:30 in the morning in their Acuras. It just shows you the state of mind in California. Also, shoplift charge for a Democrat assemblywoman. What is her name? Hayashi. She stole items allegedly at Neiman Marcus worth $2,000, walked out of the store with them, and Ms. Hayashi's lawyer said, whoops, she didn't really steal them. She meant to go back in and pay for them. She was just confused. So I suggest you use the Hayashi defense if you get caught shoplifting, saying, oh, I meant to go back in. I didn't know that was an exit door. I thought it was a door to the ladies' room. I wasn't really shoplifting and stealing, Mr. Security Guard. You may catch me on video stealing an important leather jacket for $2,000, but I'm using the Hayashi excuse. I was not leaving the store to steal anything, sir. I thought it was the ladies' room. I had Well, I had temporary blindness. I had myopia. I had something or other that my lawyer will tell you about after the plea bargain, where I get away with murder and robbery and mayhem, and anyone who's poor gets away with nothing. So that's what happens when you have absolute power. It corrupts absolutely. Here in California, you have an example of it. There's absolutely no opposition, none whatsoever. And so they're driving drunk and they're shoplifting nakedly and getting away with it. But to get back to the main story of the day, would Jesus occupy Wall Street? Of course, that's an absurd question for a number of reasons. One, because Jesus is not here. Number two, for the atheist media to bring up Jesus' name is absurd unto itself. There are so many other stories that I can tell you about, but I don't know that you'd be interested, to be honest with you. There are other stories we can talk about, such as the buying off of young voters by cutting their student loan payments. Nobody cut my student loan payment. I had to pay it, by the way. You see, I realized if you took a loan, you had to pay it off, whether it was for a house or a car or an education. No one came to me and said, boo-hoo, son. I realize you now have two children and you have to raise them. You don't have to pay anything. We're going to wipe away your debt. But that's what happens when you have a community organizer in the White House. How about the State Department spending tax dollars to buy copies of Obama's book so the books can be stocked in libraries around the world? I'm jealous that they didn't buy abuse of power or trickle up poverty. I mean, if you want fairness, the State Department should buy 70,000 copies of Trickle Up Poverty to spread around the world's libraries in order for people to see what's really going on in this country. Or are the Tea Parties really like the Wall Street and other occupiers? It's a crazy question unto itself because it defies logic to even ask the question. My good friend Joe Farah was asked by the LA Times if he would sound off on the distinctions between the Tea Party movement and the Wall Street occupiers. He said to the LA Times, sure I will. And so she asked him, what would you say? Farah said, I would say they're polar opposites. Tea Party activists are salt of the earth, hardworking Americans who previous to their activism in 2009 had never marched with placards or attended rallies or town halls. Their rallying cry is the rule of law and getting government off their backs. On the other hand, the Wall Street occupiers are jobless, directionless riffraff who don't think government can ever be big enough if their every need is not being addressed. Apparently, the reporter hung up on him. She said she had some other analysts she would be using for this one. So there's the difference, of course. We all know that the vermin in the gutters right now would like to see tyranny in this country rather than liberty. They have no desire to work. None of them, so far as I could tell, have given the world anything. They have no work ethic. They have nothing to offer anybody. And so do you ask? You ask, would Jesus occupy Wall Street? It's a ludicrous question. If you can't answer it, fine. Or if you care to call me with your favorite paragraph from Abuse of Power, let's go for that one. Let's go to Reno. Mark, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Hey, Mike. I've got the top of page 239, first paragraph starting with Jack jogged unsteadily.
Wait, Jack what?
Jogged.
Oh, read it to me. I really don't know every paragraph. Let me hear it.
Okay, no problem. Jack jogged unsteadily to the van, still not quite having found his land legs after their across-the-rooftop run. He opened the passenger door to find her just sitting there, her eyes clouded, trying her best to keep from crying.
Read the next paragraph. I'm starting to get interested in it. What else happens?
One death can produce an aesthetic reaction that allows someone to function through a short period of mourning. But multiple deaths are like a landslide. It controls you.
That's pretty good writing. Who wrote that?
Yeah, that's my favorite, Michael Savage.
Now, why did that strike you as a good couple of lines? What is it? Is it personal to you?
Yes. Also, it creates a imagery immediately in my mind that I could see as a opening or a trailer to your movie.
And this scene is on page 239. That's way on in the book. What is this, after the action scene in London?
Yeah, it's an action scene. Let me turn back a couple pages. It is.
We can't give away the plot. Let me ask you something, Mark. That's very nice of you to call in and read that to me. I actually forgot that scene, because I'm actually writing the sequel to Abuse of Power, believe it or not. I've invented a new character who is a racist, sexist, homophobic monster. who I'm going to put into the book. I'm not even going to tell you his name. He is going to say everything that people are not allowed to even think anymore, and he's going to be inserted into the next novel. Every statement that comes out of his mouth is going to be so vile and so offensive that he's sure to strike a chord in the American psyche, since nobody dares say what they actually think. Remember movies up until recently used to always have a racist, sexist, homophobic character, either amongst the police and everyone liked it? Have you noticed that the movie magnates have said no more to any kind of salty language, unless it's directed against the church or white males or America or the police? Hello, anybody home? I bet you do. Are you still there?
Yes, I am. I've noticed.
All right, you're winning a free copy of Abuse of Power. Let's have your name, and we'll move on to the other callers on the Savage Nation. Wisconsin, on the issue of Jesus. Terry, you're on the program. Welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Oh, my beloved doctor, you're absolutely correct. Jesus would have shown up at the protest, but he wouldn't have been protesting. What he would say is to each and every individual, okay, when did your parents dump you in daycare because you lost God at that point in time? And I'm here to bring you back to God.
Wait, so you're thinking that daycare centers teach you to not love God?
I think they teach you to be part of a tribe, or more like you don't have enough of a self, or you're just incapable of being yourself.
You know, I never heard this. Very, very refreshing. I never thought of it. So the daycare centers are part of a communist plot. Actually, it's true. That's why the government funds them. It actually makes sense.
Yep.
When mothers went to work and they had to dump their children in daycare centers, there was no mother. So there was no real bond with family at that point. It broke down the bond, the strongest bond in the world, which is family. Very interesting, because Karl Marx wrote that the bourgeois family must be destroyed to bring about the new man.
Correct. You know,
I've actually read Karl Marx, as opposed to people out there who don't even know him. I mean, the old joke of the Marx brothers, you can make the jokes all you want, but I've read Marx, and I've read him well, and I read him when I was 18 years old, and believe me, I understand where these people are coming from. And we are living through a Marxist revolution, because we have a Marxist revolutionary in the White House who is being advised by worldwide people with a worldwide concept of worldwide communism. And they've almost lost their footing here with this recent EU debacle that's going on. But that's a whole separate topic. I don't want to go into it. I was actually praying that the EU would dissolve. I was praying that we'd see the advent of nation states again. But it didn't quite happen, because the socialists in power made certain that they were bailed out in Greece and the bums could go on smoking and sitting around in dirty undershirts in Athens and complaining about the world. This is no slur on the Greek people. It's only a slur on Greece. No, because I went to a, Oktoberfest thing a few weeks ago, and I was anonymous as usual, and a Greek guy came up to me, nice looking man with a very beautiful girlfriend. And he said, Michael, we love you, but can I ask you, please go nice on the Greek people. They're not so bad. As I used the old Lenny Bruce line, I said, I never met a Greek I didn't like. But the fact is that Greece is the basket case of Europe. So, we left friends, of course, because he was a conservative who loved America. But the fact is that there's something inherently wrong with a nation that relies upon the handouts of harder working people such as those in Germany. And it's pretty clear that this can't go on, right?
Indeed, you are correct.
Well, so it brings us back to the vermin in the gutters. Why are they there? Well, for one, because they're being paid to be there largely. Two, because the White House has organized this along with the unions. Three, this was funded by Soros and his minions. Four, because they're trying to spark a worldwide revolution. Five, because they're trying to get Obama reelected. Six, because they want you to confuse yourself between the Tea Party movement, which is the real middle class, and these activists who are nothing but paid rent-a-mobs. They're rent-a-mobs, in plain English, with fellow traveling idiots who don't even understand what they're saying.
Yes. You have to understand that these leftists associate the Tea Party with Jesus, though. You have to understand that very often atheists confuse what Jesus was saying when he
said... I can't get into this. I wasn't around in Nazareth. I mean, what did Jesus really stand for? You know, it's like anything. Let me explain this. Jesus was a man, for sure, that we know. But the message of Jesus is a philosophy as well as a religion. Wouldn't you agree with me?
Absolutely, you are.
All right,
correct.
So people have to understand that religious prophets at some point in their history are religious leaders and prophetic. To others, they are a philosophy, a philosophical construct, and people follow this philosophical construct, whether it be Buddha and Buddhism, Jesus and Christianity, or Muhammad and Islam. To some, it's a fanaticism and a religion. To others, it's a mild association with religious doctrine. To others, it's a philosophy, okay? It's the same with Abraham. It's the same with Moses. It's the same with any religion on earth. It could be a philosophy or a religion, depending upon which way you're coming at it or looking at it. So let me go on with this idea for another moment, because it's an important one, and I've been thinking about it quite a long time now. So let us say that you are of a certain religion. You say, well, this is my religion. How religious are you? How closely do you want to follow that religion? Most modern people want nothing to do with the doxies of religion, but they want to still identify with the religion of their fathers and mothers. They don't want to yet throw away any attachment to their traditions, in other words. And so they nominally attach themselves to the holidays associated with their religion, or if they're Christian, they wear a cross once in a while, or they'll go to a church service for a funeral or a church service for a wedding. But by and large, they've basically eschewed any connection to the doxies of their religion. That's the truth for most modern Christians, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on the way you look at it. It's the same thing for Judaism. Most Jews today have no real connection with their religion. They have a connection with their traditions and with their people. Most Jews in America today recognize a few of the high holy days and the cycles and the Passover and the Rosh Hashanah holiday and this and that, but they don't really have a deep connection to the religion anymore. In fact, most of them don't even know how to reach God. That's the unfortunate truth, and I don't blame anybody for that. That's something for the individual to find. I don't think anyone can teach you how to find God. It's the same with all religions. So what am I getting at? A religion at a certain point is just a philosophy to most people. It's a philosophical way of relating to the world, and people have to understand that. And so some will alter their religion into something that it never was, and they morph it into something else. So, for example, many atheistic Jews joined a group called the Jewish Ethical Society. What is a Jewish Ethical Society? Fundamentally, it's a relationship not to a religion and not to God, but to semi-socialist beliefs. That's all it was. You know, kind of vague ideas. Help the poor, don't be bad to animals, whatever it may mean. Make sure that, I don't want to make any jokes about it. So when you hear ethical society, it sounds good on paper, but what it is really is a soft socialism. That's what you want. If that makes your motor turn, fine, good for you. But it really has nothing to do with Judaism or religion, but it's called the Jewish Ethical Society. It's the same in Christianity. You have so many far-left social groups using the Christian moniker attached to it. It has nothing to do with Christianity. I don't even have to name them for you. But you know many of them. They have nothing to do with Jesus or God. So they use it to push their soft socialism. And that is what you see going on now in the parks, such as Zucchini Park, where rotting vegetables can be found along with the feces and the urine. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Remember when Gaddafi was brutally killed by his henchmen along with the CIA and whoever else was sent out, French intelligence, British intelligence? They killed him on the spot, no doubt, because he had secrets that would have come out at trial. Now, he was a dictator and he was brutal and all of that, but he was dispatched without a trial, and I objected to it. I was the first, perhaps maybe the only voice in the media in the first few days. I don't know who else has objected to it, not because I like Gaddafi. In fact, there's a lot to have hated about him, but if either we live in a world with laws or we don't. I thought it was a very dangerous precedent to permit Obama to orchestrate the killing of Gaddafi and get away with it. I thought it was horrible for a so-called Nobel Peace Prize winner to suddenly be getting his rocks off on killing with drones, etc. I thought it was horrible for Hillary Clinton to gloat over the death of Gaddafi by saying, we came, we saw, he died. I thought it's horrible to see this government of leftists descending into the savage Bolsheviks that I fear the most. Now it comes out that Gaddafi was being sodomized after he was captured on cell phones and video cameras. Apparently, Someone was ramming a stick between Gaddafi's buttocks while he was alive through his pants. Either it was the end of a gun, which Libyans call a bekete, or a utility tool known as a Becker knife and tool, which could have been used. The fact of the matter is, whoever did this should be brought to the so-called world court. You know and I know that they will not be brought to the world court. And for people to celebrate the death of Gaddafi like this, as so many are saying, oh, he was a brutal dictator, you know what he did, he deserved it, that's utterly nonsense. If you start believing that world leaders should be killed, who does that make you? Have you looked at yourself in the mirror? Have you seen the invisible swastika developing on your forehead, Mr. Liberal? Suddenly you're celebrating murder, death, and sodomy? This is amazing to me. Now, having said that, you should know that Arab armies are amongst the most despicably brutal armies on the planet. They have no respect for human life. They usually desecrate the bodies of their enemies, unlike the Israelis, who have a policy of not desecrating the bodies of their enemies. They hold the human body sacred. But Arab armies of the 7th century, often sodomize their enemies. Why? They believed that through sodomy, the evil spirits were destroyed and a prisoner of war made harmless. So if they did sodomize Gaddafi, they were trying to destroy evil spirits. You understand how they think? Well, understand what you're dealing with here. The new friends of America are 7th century Islamists. Okay? This is a very dangerous world that we're emerging into. However, you do know that at a certain point in history, Gaddafi was our friend. You do know that in the 1980s, Gaddafi was an ally of the Soviet Union, who sponsored terrorist acts in West Germany and Britain. I could go on, but the fact of the matter is, we are living in an Orwellian propaganda state. And make no mistake about it, he was executed because Britain, France, and the United States wanted him gone. They did not want him to bear witness to their co-conspiracy in many of his despicable acts, in my estimation. Of course, we can't prove it. We came, we saw, he died. Thank you, Hillary. That was brilliant.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Patriotic Friday on the Savage Nation. I think we're going to be playing patriotic music at least every Friday because I don't hear it anymore, and I want to hear it. I'm an ultra-nationalist. I believe in borders, language, and culture. I'm sick of creeping socialism. I despise the idea of a one world government run by George Soros, Bill Clinton, and Hillary Clinton. Perhaps Barack Obama. I really don't want to be ruled by some unknown bureaucrat from Brussels, nor from some zombie from another nation. I really do love America, and therefore we will play some patriotic music on the show all through today. We're talking about, would Jesus occupy Wall Street? Of course, that's an absurd question for two reasons. One, because we don't know who Jesus really was. Number two, he was not a political figure. He was a religious figure, a prophet, as it were, if you wish to use that phrase. And I doubt very much that he would be with the vermin of the gutters. Jesus probably would have gone there and said to them, go to help. He wouldn't have said, go to hell. He would have said, why don't you people just get off your behinds and go to help others, in plain English. In my day, if you were an idealist, as I was, what you did was, if you cared about the poor, you went to work as a social worker, as I did. After all, I began my professional career out of college as a social worker in the New York State Department of Welfare. That's what it was called then. You're not allowed to call it that anymore. Somewhere along the way in the 60s, it went from the Department of Welfare I don't know what they call it. I really have no social services. What, I owe them something? What do you mean social services? And that's when it all became perverted. The whole concept became perverted in the 60s. What do you mean by social services? I have to serve people who are too lazy to serve themselves? That's, yeah, that's what they mean by social services. You have to serve them. Gourmet meals, tents, blankets, fireplaces. I'm going to serve them? Jesus would have said, go to help. That's all. You care so much about the poor, go join a group that helps people. So as I say, you either became a social worker, if you were a foolish idealist, as I was, or you became a teacher, if you were a foolish idealist, and you worked in the poorest possible neighborhood in the city to show how good a liberal you are, as I did. Or you go to the ends of the earth to save the nation's rainforests, as I did. You sacrifice, in other words, if you really want to help. You don't sit on your behind in a park with a drum until 3 in the morning smoking dope and having sex and expecting some out-of-work chef to cook you a meal. Or you join the Peace Corps if you really were an idealist who was concerned about the disequities in the world. These people don't care about disequities in the world. They're part of an army, a red army. They're a red army being funded by George Soros, the White House, and, of course, the unions. And they're being used to intimidate you into several different things. One, to stop demanding the government stop stealing from you. Two, to stop demanding anything of the government other than they continue to fleece you. And three, to permit the unions to reelect the shill all over again. At least that's my opinion. So if you care to talk about it, we can on the Savage Nation. It is Friday. I've been off for a while with a few issues, some health, etc. And I listened to a replay of my show, frankly, yesterday. I liked it so much I decided to give it a shot again. No, I was feeling really down. I really was. I wasn't feeling good for a while. And I really listened to some of my replay, and I said, God, that guy is good. Who is he? And, of course, I was joking because I really think that my shows are really good and worth listening to, or, frankly, I wouldn't do them. The day came that I really didn't think that what I was saying was of use or of entertainment value, a combination. It'd be empty out there. I got to tell you, there's really nothing out there. I mean, I don't play golf. I don't play tennis. I'm an inner-city kid who never really, I was an Anglophile later on, but I never really picked up the English games, such as lawn tennis, which I think you call tennis, and things of that nature that the British aristocracy sort of fed themselves on. I see nothing in hitting a little ball on a grassy field. Now, I know that tens of millions of people like it. I still don't understand it. I know it takes a great deal of skill, but I still don't understand it. It's the same with running around in white shorts with a webbed racket in your hand and hitting something over a net. I can't quite understand why people are so mystified by it, but I understand it takes great skill to do it. Nevertheless, it's not something I looked forward to doing all of my life at some stage of my existence. I know a man, for example, who is my age, who boxes. He's an amateur boxer. He trains 3 hours every other day, and he's really good at it. He's tougher than he ever was. And he's a professional. He's not a boxer. But that's what he loves. He loves boxing. He loves fighting. That's his passion. I don't have, a thing in that area. I mean, I respect people who do all of these things. I just don't do them. Everyone winds up finding an outlet for themselves in their own way, right? I like the water. If I don't get out on the water, often, I get really edgy. I once met a pilot. 40 years ago, I met a pilot, airline pilot. It was a private pilot in a small plane. I was up in Vancouver. I don't know where I was. And he said to me that his wife tells him that he gets very edgy if he doesn't fly for a day. He's got to be in the air in order to be himself. I think that's a mark of finding what you really do best, because I'm almost the same way with regard to boating. Unless I get out on the water, there's something off in my being. So you know what I'm saying? Whether it's a little boat or a big boat, it doesn't really matter. It's about that fourth dimension. It's, we live in a three-dimensional world. Most of us are trapped in really a one- or two-dimensional world, and we are throttled in what we can say. We are afraid to say what we really feel. We're not allowed to say it at work. We're reluctant to say it at home for offending our wives. And so we wind up living in a little jail cell We live in an American prison today. It is not really the land of the free and the home of the brave. It's the land of the freak and the home of the knave, as I said many years ago. Yes, the land of the freak and the home of the knave, as I said many years ago, which will soon be appropriated by those who stole things such as Cain is Abel, which no one has given me credit for, and phrases such as Obama, which no one has given me credit for. Oh, I have so many phrases. I'm just a wordsmith, you see, which is why I write books in addition to talking on the radio. And basically, that's my identity. At a certain phase, you become what you do, especially in our society. And so it's easy to say that there's much more to your life than your profession. But I'm going to ask you, what if you're a neurosurgeon? Does a neurosurgeon believe he could put down the scalpel and enjoy his life the day he stops practicing surgery? I can't stop writing. I'll probably write until the day I die. I might stop speaking because this takes a whole different level of energy, focus, and stress than anything you can imagine. I spoke to a man last week who said to me, what you do is probably one of the most stressful things anyone could do. I said, why do you say that? He said, because if I have to give a speech, one speech for a half an hour to an organization, he said, I am in a state of kind of panic for a couple of weeks before it, and it takes me a few weeks to calm down from the speech. See, I don't feel that. I'm a born speaker. I was good at this in the first grade. Could be because I had a gift of gab. Could be because I enjoyed audiences. Could be because I had a natural gift to lead people. I don't really know. I think actually it's because I was the only kid in a school of poor kids who had a blue suit. At the end of the day, I think that the reason I learned how to speak so well is because my mother, God bless her, even though we were poor, dressed me well, and she insisted that her man-child in the promised land would have a little blue suit for special occasions. And so when they asked for an announcer in the assembly at PS 48 in the Bronx, the teacher said, which one of you has a suit? I think I was the only one to raise my hand and say, I have a suit. She said, then you will be the announcer. Now, it doesn't mean that because I had the blue suit, I was able to speak. But it turned out that the blue suit enabled me to find out that I could speak. And so, therefore, I haven't stopped talking since. It's true. It's an amazing thing. I read somewhere that Aristotle walked around ancient Greece, ancient Athens, speaking of the Greeks. They didn't bail him out in those days. He walked around in his smock or whatever he wore, his toga, I think his toga. And if he couldn't find an audience, he would stop people in Athens and engage them in conversation because he was so anxious to test to express his ideas. Of course, that's because there were no microphones in Greece, because if there were microphones in Greece and transmitters, I guess Aristotle would have been a talk show host. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is Patriotic Friday on the Savage Nation. We stand in opposition to the street vermin communist socialists occupying some beautiful areas of America's cities, the police being constrained by quasi-liberal, quisling, coward mayors across America. And we are talking about that. We're talking also about other topics on the program, including, well, you have a favorite sentence or paragraph from Abuse of Power, call it in, give it a quick read. I'd like to hear from you. And we're talking about the GOP. Is it racing to lose the election? I think so. With so many campaign stops and so many debates in front of liberal moderators, so-called, you'd have to ask yourself, do they have a death wish or are they just stupid? Either answer is not very good, by the way. Sacramento, Susan, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, it's an honor to talk to you. I purchased your book online through Amazon. And my husband actually got the book before I did. So he took it to the firehouse, read it in a 24-hour period, brought it home. And as I usually do when I'm reading a book, I kind of imagine the characters to a movie. And
right.
Jack Hatfield, I imagined as Jim Caviezel. I don't know if you know who he is.
Is Jim the guy who played Jesus in The Passion of Christ?
Passion of the Christ. He's actually playing in a new TV series called Person of Interest.
No, he's a fine actor.
Excellent. He's very good. He's perfect for the part.
Yes. Okay, that's good. Well, I have someone picked out for Tony already, Tony Antonori. You know Tony, his sidekick, his ex-Green Beret sidekick, right?
Yes.
Take a guess who I want to use in the movie for that. Remember the guy I had on a few weeks ago, Robert Davi, guy who plays gangsters in 100 movies?
Yes, he was wonderful. That was
He'd be perfect for that part. He'd be perfect in the movie.
Yes, I pictured, I don't know if you remember Arlie Ermey.
So what's your, give us a favorite paragraph or sentence from Abuse of Power. I'd like to hear it from a woman's point of view.
Chapter 41. In the months that followed, the world did not miraculously change. The good guys had won, but that didn't necessarily mean the bad guys would be punished. Not in that way that Jack would have liked, with handcuffs and trials and lifetime without parole. Instead, the rich and powerful managed to prevail, as they often do.
Yeah, unfortunately that's true, isn't it?
Absolutely.
So there's a bit of realism in it. However, there is a concluding scene that's quite satisfying as well, isn't there?
Yes, there is.
And we don't know who did it to the bad guys, but somebody did for sure. All right, well, I'm going to give you a free copy of Abuse of Power. What are you going to do with it?
I'm a volunteer for the USO at Chicago O'Hare, and I'm going to put it in our library.
Isn't that sweet of you? God. And just think, you're not even a member of Hillary Clinton's State Department buying copies of Barack Obama's ghost book. Thank you very much. Stay in the line. A copy will go out to you. Isn't that sweet? See, now there's an example of the woman's giving a copy of a book to the service members' library. She's not sitting in a park with rotting vegetables around her, banging a drum at 3 in the morning, smoking medical marijuana. She's not sitting around abusing the cities. She's doing something. She's doing something. Hawaii Joe, you're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I would like to say that I almost always agree with you. However, I do support the protesters and the occupiers for one simple reason, and that is that they are exposing the police state that we live in.
Duh? What police state? You mean people should be able to defecate and urinate in public places?
No, absolutely not. The police state I refer to are pieces of legislation that started with the Patriot Act, where the government can now...
Whoa, wait a minute, sir. They're not talking about the Patriot Act. They're talking about reappropriating the earnings of the middle class. They don't care about the Patriot Act. Tell me about the protesters and what they stand for. Do you know what they stand for?
Well, you have a wide range of protesters, and yeah, I've seen the people with the communist signs and the socialism sign, and I see the SEIU guys, but we also got a lot of military personnel getting involved simply for the reason that they have gone and put their lives on the line and seen their friends and fathers die.
Oh, that's rubbish. That is utter rubbish. They're putting that up again like, you know, soldiers for peace. Most of these are fake. They're not even soldiers. Come on, you know that and I know that. Most of them are not soldiers. I know that for a fact. In fact, the Veterans for Peace organization was riddled with frauds who were never in the military. What's interesting to me is how groups that hate the military are suddenly buddy-buddy with military because they moved over to the communist side. They found a few disgruntled soldiers. I'm sure they have. There's always disgruntled soldiers who come out and are fit for nothing. Many soldiers come out and can't adjust to civilian life. So they find a place to go now where they can have free sex and a joint. And they're suddenly happy. They're amongst their friends. What, I'm supposed to listen to them because they were in the military? That doesn't make them sacrosanct. I've seen many generals who run for office who are absolute doofuses who don't know a damn thing. Just because you're in the military doesn't mean you're qualified to be a president. You know that.
Well, that's true. And I'll bet you those guys...
Well, thanks for the call. I'm not going to listen to this. All of a sudden, it's all military now. That's what you're going to hear. Now, call talk shows and talk about the so-called Marine who had his skull so-called broken by a so-called tear gas canister. It could have been a homeless bum cracked him on the head because he was trying to steal his old lady. How do you know why he was cracked on the head? You know the homeless camps have now invaded the Occupy camps. There are areas of these Occupy regions that the other people can't go into because they're filled with ex-jailbirds, rapists, murderers, pickpockets, cutthroats, you name it, sodomizers. They're all in there now having the best time of their lives. They're having gourmet meals, and all of the gourmet moronic girls are now available to them too. Yeah, what are you protesting, man? You want to come over to my tent? Oh, yeah, I've not seen this before. Yeah, let's get down on some protest work, Barbara.
Savage.
So the radical left of center Obama group has taken over America, and they're secretly, or in some cases, openly cheering on the communists in the streets with the so-called Occupy groups. And yet not all Democrats are willing to suddenly jump in behind these street rats. It may look like a populist-fueled Occupy Wall Street, but it isn't. It's not spontaneous. It is carefully crafted, carefully financed, carefully organized, just as the so-called Arab Spring was, which I aptly named the Arab Winter, which it is. It is an Arab winter, not an Arab spring. Islamism has won. Arab moderates have lost. The Christians are being killed. Churches are being burned. And the atheist vermin in the media who are asking, would Jesus join the Occupy Wall Street crowd, say nothing about the descendants of Jesus who are being killed in the Middle East by the Muslims. How's that for a world gone upside down? How is that for a world that has been tilted on its axis by so many forces of evil that it's hard to even describe them? And so those of you who have come from the former Soviet Union, who listen to my show religiously every day, know exactly what's going on in the streets. While the average American is politically so naive, they don't quite know what to make of it all. They are reminded, some of them, of their own youth when they marched against the war in Vietnam, and they have somewhat of a sympathy for what they think are youthful idealists who simply want more fairness in our society. And so they say, well, they're not all bad. They stand for good things. And who amongst us doesn't really think that some of the bankers shouldn't be in jail, especially those who took ransoms that would astonish King Midas for their own personal gain after bankrupting their companies? Or how many of us don't think it's unfair that General Electric, which owns NBC and MSNBC, has a man named Jeffrey Immelt, who is Obama's jobs czar, and yet he has exported one of GE's major factories, an X-ray factory, to China, a factory been there over 100 years. A man who sits at the head of General Electric, which earned over $5 billion in America and paid no taxes, U.S. income tax last year, gets to be our jobs czar, and he considers himself not part of the 1%. Isn't it interesting how many zillionaires are now suddenly identifying with the vermin in the gutters? Why do you suppose that is? Because much of the taxes that are being stolen from you, much of the prohibitive levels of taxation in this country, are going to the cronies of Obama with fake solar companies, fake construction companies, fake blank companies. You fill in the blank. You can call it patronage if you want. You can call it graft, which is the proper word. It's graft. It's the most graft-ridden administration in history. Now, I read an article this morning from the Washington Times, What America Could Learn from the British Empire, Frugality. It's a complicated article, but I think it's worth summarizing. I put it up on michaelsavage.com. I'll read you a little bit of it because it's so good to show you how small the British civil service was and how little they needed to spend to manage the largest empire the world had ever seen, the British Empire. And he writes that the British Empire gave birth to the United States and gave America its ideas of liberty and limited government. But the fact of the matter is, compared to today's modern welfare state, the British Empire, and that is Britain, and the quarter of the globe that it governed in the 1920s, one-fourth of the globe was governed by the British, operated on a budget the size of the projected fiscal revenue for Best Buy stores in 2012. That's in inflation-adjusted dollars. What does he mean by that? Listen to how little money they had to spend to manage subjects. The British Sudanese Civil Service, which governed the country of 9 million people, was 140 men strong. 140 men from Britain governed the country of 9 million people in Sudan, smaller than the combined active rosters of the Rams, the Packers, and the Cowboys of the NFL. And they governed with a far lighter and fairer hand than the regime now in Khartoum. In India, 100,000 British soldiers and civil servants ruled more than 300 million people. To put that in perspective, in 2009, California, a state with a population of about 37 million, That state had 206,000 full-time state employees. That's not even counting city, county, or federal workers. Did you hear that? The state of California had 206,000 full-time state employees, not even counting city, county, or federal workers. And you try to get a pothole filled in the state of California. You try to get anything done in the state of California. See what you find. You find a drunken treasury secretary weaving on the road at Sacramento at 12:30 in the morning, who the governor will not permit to resign because anyone who runs his budget must by nature be weaving at 12:30 in the morning. And oh, by the way, he wrote, it's a little remarkable that the British ended up taxing the Indians at a far lower rate than the Mughals had taxed their subjects before the British arrived. Did you know that? You didn't know any of this. All you know is the rubbish you were taught in college about how bad the British were. There are other examples, by the way, and he goes on to say, in fact, he says, one can only wish that trust fund graduates of Harvard, Yale, Dartmouth, Princeton, Stanford, Sewanee, and Washington and Lee, who read Lord Jim in college and have a taste for adventure and good deeds, might put their financial inheritance to practical use and work their way into governing Darfur, East Timor, or Guinea-Bissau. That would surely be a far more effective way of helping the tribes of Darfur, the Timorese, or the people of Guinea-Bissau, than joining the Peace Corps or working for the UN or getting a PhD and lecturing on the evils of colonialism. Even when the British government was footing the bill, economy was a byword, which is why, unlike us, the British Empire was content to punish Afghan regimes that didn't behave without occupying the country and trying to nation-build. It's why Winston Churchill and T.E. Lawrence of Arabia installed a Hashemite monarch to govern Iraq after World War I and turned to the Royal Air Force to keep the peace there. It was cheaper than ground troops. And the British intervened again in a big way only in World War II when they reversed a pro-Nazi coup in Iraq. It's why the British relied on martial races, quote-unquote, the Gurkhas, the Sikhs, and others, that they defeated in combat and then turned into allies, using the Gurkhas and Sikhs to police native territories. It's why Lord Cromer said of Lord Kitchener, a career soldier, that, quote, he won his well-deserved peerage because he was an excellent man of business. He looked after every important detail and enforced economy. In other words, he ensured his troops did not waste ammunition, and he kept tight screws on the costs of his campaigns. The United States, alas, shuns the idea of being an imperial power. Instead, we're a welfare state power. During the Vietnam War, for instance, LBJ extended the Great Society to Southeast Asia to the point that the U.S. Military Assistance Command Vietnam became, in the words of historian Walter McDougall, less like a comrade-in-arms to the Saigon regime than a nagging social worker, and so forth and so on. He then writes this, and you should listen to it. In Afghanistan, the attitude seems to have taken hold that corrupt warlords are to be shunned rather than cultivated and put to good use. So instead of warrior races filling the Afghan army and police force, we have effeminate, mascara-wearing, cannabis-smoking, hand-holding types who are the despair of their American trainers. Did anyone know this is what's going on in Afghanistan? Did any of you ever read that anywhere? Did any of you see one picture yet of the Afghan army heads who are effeminate, mascara-wearing, cannabis-smoking, hand-holding types who are the despair of their American trainers? The British Empire would never have spent and never did spend more than $1 trillion on Afghanistan and Iraq. Instead, British imperialists had specific objectives, keeping the peace on the northwest frontier, denying Russian influence in Afghanistan, maintaining a friendly regime in Baghdad to guarantee access to Iraqi oil, and achieve them in the most economical way possible. It's not the costs of empire we should fear or shun, at least empire run on the green eye shade British imperial model, but the ravenous maw of the welfare state that sinks its teeth into everything, ripping the heart out of our economy, gnashing to bits our freedoms, even projecting itself abroad and demanding ever more from a cowed populace it claims to protect. Hear, hear! That is written by Mr. Crocker. What America could learn from the British Empire, frugality, in the Washington Times. I think it's up on... Can we have the British national anthem? The source of this is the Washington Times. It's beautiful. What America could learn from the British Empire, frugality. And so maybe we need a little bit more of the British imperial management style and a little less of the American welfare style of management. I guess you don't have it. It would have been a good time because my voice is starting to go. Here, hip, hip, hooray! Hip, hip, hooray! You know, until you've seen a British military band, you've never seen a military band. Until you've seen a British... They have the greatest pomp and circumstance the world has ever seen. I mean, it's very stirring to see it. I'll never forget when I arrived. Now I'm going to get drift off like Grandpa. No, seriously. It's a personal experience. If you've walked with kings and never lost the common touch, then you'll be a man, my friend. I've walked with kings. King Tonga, King Tupou of Tonga. He was the only king I ever met, the only king I ever want to meet, as a matter of fact. Not because he was a bad guy, but one king is quite enough. Thank you very much. When I first arrived in Tonga, no, it was on the wharf. I remember taking the Canberra from Honolulu to Fiji, to Suva in Fiji. 1969, I arrived. Young graduate student. I had a family at the time, still do. But I was an idealist. Rather than sitting in a park and occupying it, I did what I could to earn money, and then I took what extra money I had, and I tried to run off to the islands to rescue what was left of the indigenous medicinal lore, because I was one of those starry-eyed idealists. Instead of burning things, throwing rocks, I tried to do something good for the world. Anyway, so I rode the Canberra, one of the great old passenger liners of its time. This was before passenger liners became cruise ships. Not the same thing, by the way. Those ships were used in service from Australia back to the home country of Britain to take the civil servants on home leave, primarily. That was the P&O liner was its primary mission, was transferring a lot of the lower-level civil servants back and forth between Australia and the UK and England. And, of course, in first class you had the higher-level bureaucrats and some lower royalty. And in the other class, where I traveled, you had the bureaucrats, but it was a lovely ship. When I arrived after a number of days in Suva, I'll never forget as long as I live. I think I still have it on a Super 8 film somewhere, which I'd like to put together one day with all the other 1,000 movies I have of my early years in the islands. There was a band of Fijians dressed in militaries in the reds and the whites of the colonial times playing some sort of arrival song. It was one of the most stirring arrivals that I ever had in my life and have ever had since. And, of course, that was the last year of colonialism for Fiji. And Fiji, after that, went through some very, very bad times with local rule, much like the local school districts in New York City. Once they got rid of the heavy hand, quote-unquote, of the New York City Department of Education and turned it over to the so-called communities, what you had was graft, corruption, and stupid students. I'll be right back. Savage. This ain't a ball game. It's the Savage Nation, but it's Patriotic Friday, and I want to play patriotic music at least every Friday, since it seems to have been disappeared from the American media landscape. So the question was, would Jesus occupy Wall Street? Of course, the answer is absurd, because you can make up any answer that you'd like, given whatever political orientation you might be. But frankly, I know what Jesus Gomez would say about the protesters. You ask me what Jesus would do with the Wall Street protesters? Jesus Gomez would go there and give them a good beating, since Jesus Gomez is busy working 12 hours a day or 15 hours a day for $10 or $12 an hour, cooking, cleaning, picking vegetables, carpentry, plumbing. That's what Jesus Gomez would do. You don't see any Latinos in the crowd, do you? You don't see any illegal immigrants sitting there with the lily-white vermin who have never worked a day in their lives. You don't see any calluses on the hands of the Occupy groups, do you? Now, you may see calluses on their buttocks from having sat so long in such a cold park, and I guess that could be considered a work-related disability. Perhaps. Maybe they'll declare themselves victims of some kind from all that sitting in Zucchini Park around all of that fecal matter and all of those vegetables. But as I say, very few of them have ever worked a day in their lives, unless you consider community organizing or union thuggery a full day's work. But most of the others, these trust fund lunatics who can't find a real job and don't have the guts to go out and redo their education, go to work in the Peace Corps if they care so much about disequities in the world, just do anything for somebody, do something for somebody other than showing how great you are, sitting on your you-know-what. You don't see any Jesus, do you, amongst the Wall Street protesters or in Oakland? They're too busy working the American dream. See, they want to make a living. They want to make a living and they want to support themselves because they at least they have self-respect. At least they have self-respect. They understand the value of hard work. They didn't come here to sit on their behinds with a bunch of lily-white protesters. That's why you don't see any Latinos amongst the Wall Street protesters. So far as I can tell, most of them are one and the same. Anyway, that's my answer to it. You ask, what would Jesus do? There's your answer. Just think of Jesus Gomez when you want to answer that question. I hope you've enjoyed my analysis today. Let's go to the callers. Tanya in Ohio, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
I feel it, Jack said.
Wait. Stop. Hold it. Tell us what you're going to read from Abuse of Power. What page, please?
It's chapter 2, page.
All right.
The first page in chapter 2.
Okay, fire away as fast as you can.
I feel it, Jack said in a dry monotone. It reeked of insincerity, but Drabinsky didn't notice. He was in the moment, psyched and impatient. Jack understood. These were the times they'd trained for. For Drabinsky, it was a chance to test himself. For Jack, it was part of a larger, frustrating picture of failing water instead of being able to get to the source and stop the damn flood.
Good writing. Who wrote that?
You.
So did you read the entire novel, Abuse of Power, Tanya?
I have not. I haven't been able to afford to pick it up yet. However, I'm working hard, and with the one you'll get.
So how did you read that paragraph? Where'd you find that paragraph to read? From the free sample on michaelsavage.com?
I did. Thank you. I'll donate the one you give me, though.
No, I'm giving it to you for free. You don't have to give it to anybody. Enjoy it. Pass it around to your friends. Abuse of Power goes out to you. Special deal today on the Savage Nation. Today only. I wanted people to remember that, you know, this book is pretty good. So 1-800-449-8255. Visit me online at you know what. Visit me online at you know what. Well, it's been a lot of fun thus far on the program. I've had a heck of a time with the patriotic music. Could you play Washington Post for me while I look up on my website to see what I want to speak about next? That. Is that the Washington Post? Yeah, I guess. The bad part, though. Go to the good part. It's like the bad part of a book. That's the part I like best. John Philip Sousa, I believe. Portuguese immigrant, by the way. He didn't come here to sit in a park. He gave America something, didn't he? Think about the waves of immigrants. They came here and they gave the world something, and take a look at what it resulted in. Take a look. You got white, lily-white communist morons, trust fund idiots who got nothing to do. They can't find a job. They trained for nothing in college. The only thing they're suitable for, they can't even do right. They take a job in Starbucks as a barrister. They last 3 days before they have a nervous breakdown. They have to go back to a therapist. They didn't like people asking them for a coffee too fast. You ever go into a Starbucks and see these lunatics? How long it takes them to pour a cup of coffee? You say, give me a small. They say, we call it a tall. You say, give me a this. They say that. They argue with you. They don't know the first thing about service or people. Why? Because they were trained to be managers. Only there's nothing to manage. They were trained to be leaders. Only there's nothing to lead. They were trained, in other words, to be nothing. Because that's all they're good for. And so what they're doing is sitting in Zucchini Park. So you ask, would Jesus join them? Not Jesus Gomez. And take a look at the crowds. Do you see any Latinos in the crowds? Answer, no.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Now, we have lots of questions today on the Savage Nation. This week, the Crescent News Network dedicated an entire segment of their show to the question, would Jesus occupy Wall Street? Do you believe that he would? Why or why not? Now, we've discussed this. Do you believe this was an appropriate question for CNN to have raised? I mean, after all, don't the atheists at CNN believe in the separation of church and state? Why don't they ask, would Muhammad have occupied Wall Street? Would Moses have occupied Wall Street? Would Buddha have occupied Wall Street? No, but they said, would Jesus occupy Wall Street? CNN's question was based in part on a statement from a Vatican official in support of the Wall Street protest. I'm not surprised by that. I mean, it is the Vatican, after all. I mean, the Vatican has been co-opted by the left for a long time. Haven't you seen this take place in your own church? Do you actually think that most of the Occupy Wall Street protesters are religious? I don't. I think most of them are a-religious. Do you approve of the police using tear gas to clear the Occupy Oakland protesters in California from a rat-infested public square? I do. I believe tear gas and stun grenades should be used at other protests until we clean out the streets and make it safe for people. Civil liberties require civility in order to have liberties. Do you believe the Occupy Wall Street movement represents America, or is it better represented by the Tea Party? You know what I think. Don't you think Obama's trying to buy off young voters by cutting their student loan payments? Duh. He may as well just give them a lid of grass to go with it. How do you feel about the U.S. State Department spending your tax dollars to buy books written by Obama so they can be stocked in libraries around the world? Why didn't they just buy Abuse of Power? Or liberalism is a mental disorder, or trickle-up poverty. I feel really, really hurt by this. Well, those are some of the questions today on the Savage Nation, and there are more. Now let's go to my website, michaelsavage.com. If you haven't gone there, go there. Radical Islamist opens fire outside U.S. Embassy in Sarajevo. There's a nice picture of the fella. So-called professor at Kent State University shouted out death to Israel during a diplomat speech. He has tenure. I guess with tenure comes abuse. Speaking of which, Abuse of Power is now 6 weeks on bestseller lists. And frankly, I'm asking the readers today an interesting question. Who is reading Abuse of Power? Men? Women? Did you buy it as a gift? Who'd you buy it for? And you'll see. You'll be surprised by the results, I'm sure. It may not be who you think. Also on michaelsavage.com, Obama readies to blast NASA. He's going to end planetary exploration, giving China a superior edge in the space race. Thank you, Obama, for setting us back 50 years. This is not a progressive president. It is a regressive president. As I predicted in Tunisia, Islamists have won. What else have I predicted? Video shows more unguarded surface-to-air missiles in Libya. Apparently, I'm not the only one who complained about Gaddafi's assassination and execution. Gaddafi's family is going to file war crimes complaints saying that his Geneva Convention rights were violated. No kidding. There's a nice picture of the first family eating greasy fried foods in the White House while watching TV. Michelle is wearing a superb outfit of cutoffs and a wife beater outfit. And so I affectionately entitled it Obama's Occupy the White House, because that's what it looks like to me. Muslims, again, our friends the Muslims, are complaining that their human rights are being violated because a Catholic university will not give them a room to pray in without a cross in it. I suggest that we try to see if a Muslim university in Saudi Arabia or even in America, there must be Muslim schools, if they'll create a school with a cross in it, a class with a cross in it. You know what it's all about, don't you? Taking over a nation step by step. Funniest article is the Occupy Wall Street kitchen staff protesting fixing food for the freeloaders in the gutters. In other words, they've decided there are people who should be working. There are other stories. Some of them I can't even read for you, honest to God. Some of them are too painful. 16 examples of Steve Jobs being a huge jerk. I'm sick and tired of them turning him into a saint. You know, it's almost like the Obama worship. Okay? He's a human being. And he was pretty aggressive. That's how he got where he was. Stop turning him into a saint. Steve Jobs, rest in peace. But let's not glorify him. ACLU sues a sheriff for harassing a man who photographed the subway in Los Angeles. Cops say, should we really ignore suspicious activity? Of course not. You should arrest the ACLU and make them clean up slop pots.
Is this what you were talking about when you said we needed a revolution?
This is the beginning. This is the beginning.
And where is it going to go from here?
Common, ordinary people have places to live, good jobs, money for education for their kids and great schools, health care for all. That's when the revolution will have succeeded.
What do you think it's going to take to achieve the goal?
This kind of thing on a massive scale.
A massive?
Not just here in Chicago, but throughout this country and throughout the world.
You think it's going to require collapsing the American government?
Personally, I think so, because I feel that the resistance against this will be overwhelming. It'll be very strong, and it'll be intransigent and relentless. But on the other hand, power of the people united is capable of great things.
Now, come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now. Obama tells Hollywood, I finished 60% of my goals. Oh, God. It's the last 40% that I worry about. Finally, if you really have had a good day and you want to ruin it, on the bottom of michaelsavage.com, there's a picture of Levi Yitzhak Rosenbaum, who is a kidney matchmaker who pled guilty in an organ trafficking case. If I were a rich man, All of this and more on michaelsavage.com.
Savage.
Turn the economy around. When you see 23, 24 months of consecutive job growth in our private sector, and you see the president standing up saying, look, it's not a bailout to help police officers and teachers and help people stay in their homes. These are not bailouts. These are Americans. This is our commitment. And I think that the president's being effective.
Did you hear that? And it's organizations like the AARP who control these leftist politicians. AMAC is fighting back. The Association of Mature American Citizens. Your membership can help stop the left wing. Call 800-255-4199, 800-255-4199, or go to americaisrising.com, 800-255-4199, americaisrising.com. The world's burning. Nation states are now weaker than global capitalists like George Soros. Obama may be the one in front of the cameras, but men such as Jeffrey Immelt of GE are frankly, in my opinion, the ones who call the shots. 100 years ago, the great powers, Britain, France, and Germany. Well, 100 years ago, the great powers were Britain, France, Germany, and the United States. Okay, let's go back. Today, well, wait, the great powers 100 years ago were Britain, France, Germany, the U.S., Russia, you'd say. They had a pretty powerful navy till the Japanese sank them. But anyway, today, the real powers are Goldman Sachs, Exxon, and Google. And, of course, some unknown hedge funds. The global capitalists who control these companies have far greater power than the leader of any state. And they operate outside the law of any nation. They're unelected. So when you're watching the uprisings in the Middle East, you should know that it has less to do with which dictator did what or how Russia has responded at the UN than what certain individuals are doing to twist events in favor of profit for themselves. As the Middle East is burning, the globalists are earning. That's the end of the news for the day. The rest you can read for yourself. By the way, here's a movie that you will not be seeing in the near future. I understand it's not going to be made. It's Martin Scorsese directing Lady Gaga in the life story of Arianna Huffington. The working title is From Plato to Play-Doh. From Plato to Play-Doh. 1-800-449-8255. Mike in Pittsburgh, PA, what's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Well, I was going to say, in terms of knowing whether someone's real or not, I think it's more of, well, there's two things, whether someone's real or whether someone's really good. Like, a real person seems to come off in terms of, like, they don't compromise what they believe in. But a crazy person can be the same way, or even a real evil person. They don't compromise on those things, but they also don't go to outside influences and to the pressure that everyone puts upon them to be a certain person or act a certain way.
Right, right. You're making a very good point. So, therefore, in the midst of all of this, how do you judge as a listener and a reader of internet and other media, radio, TV, how do you judge who's telling the truth?
Lots and lots of listening repetitively. I've listened to you a lot. I listened to Jerry Doyle. I've listened to, there's a few that I think really are right on the mark. But over time, I assess whether these people are flip-flopping in the wind or just, you know, going with the political breezes, or if they're just actually speaking what they feel. And there's very, very few in this world anymore, and Michael Savage, you are one of the few. And
well,
I
let me say, all I can say to you is this. I don't know the other people, what they really think. I think most of the people in the top do believe what they say, truthfully, on the right, that I've met or that I've heard about. I can't speak for anyone on the left because I don't really know anybody in the media on the left. I don't know what they believe. I know that many people in Hollywood who I've come to meet, who are very high up, all tell me on the side that although they're diehard Democrats, they believe in a lot of what I say. They agree with a lot of what I say. They can't say it, though, because of political reasons in the world in which they run. You've got to understand that many people who define themselves as moderate Democrats are somewhat conservative, but they can't show it. You know what I'm saying? Because their powers are controlled to a great extent. Their social world would come to an end if they ever expressed certain opinions, because the left rules their world like fascism. There's almost no tolerance for any diversion of thought in groupthink. And some of these people are extremely powerful, by the way. And yet even they cannot express themselves outside of their, close circles, Mike.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Well, I thank you for being such a long-term listener. You know, I'm going to tell you something about radio. Radio, of all the mediums, is, I would think, the easiest to tell if someone's BSing you. Because all we got is our voice. We have no other special effects. We don't have legs to cross. We don't have lipstick. We're not the lipstick girls on Fox. Some of them are very pretty. And I'm sure they're very sincere. But, you know, you got the female charms. You know, how could you not want to believe someone who's so pretty, right? You don't know what I look like. You don't want to know what I look like. Trust me. I don't want to know what I look like, what time and gravity does to a person. I look back at myself in pictures 20 years ago. I don't want to look forward 20 years. But that's neither here nor there. All I got is my voice. And so all you've got is your ears. You got nothing else. Your ears and your thinking. So you say, is this guy on the level? So I want to, I guess I'm not doing this for a reason. There's no reason other than one of the tactics of the radical left, as funded by George Soros through the fake Stalinist group Media Matters, is to say that everyone on the right is making it up, that they're faking it, they don't believe a word they say, denigrate those on the right, say they don't really mean it. So you've got to be very careful what you read and what you listen to, you know? Now I'm going to take some more calls. I'm having such a good time. It's amazing because I didn't think I would. I didn't feel good today. I woke up sick. As I told you, beware the Ides of March. Man, March 1st comes, I'm sick. Certain thing comes in bloom out here. I get like crazy from it. Emotionally, my adrenaline gets pushed. I can't sleep. And yet my mind is sharper than ever when I go on the air because I'm using the adrenaline to drive my insights. I can actually feel it. On the air, I'm as sharp as a tack. Off the air, I have to stay in bed most of the time. The struggle is overwhelming. I mean, it's really getting bad. So Israel in New York, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, there's only two ways to identify people. It's through their voice, their tone of voice, and if you have the pleasure of seeing them, is their eyes, because the eyes are the gateway to the soul and never lie.
Okay, but wait. Now, in radio, you can't see my eyes. All you can hear is my voice, correct?
That's correct. So it's a tone of voice. People who are making things up or reading off of teleprompters, usually their voices go up and down. They're not as even keel as a person who's telling the truth.
Now, Israel, were you in the Mossad?
No.
Did you work for the DEA undercover in Belarus? I mean, how do you come to this conclusion?
I've read over the years books and books on behaviorisms, mannerisms, and it's just basic 101 stuff.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you should say it. Again, going back to one of my favorite villains, Larry David. I was watching an HBO piece the other night where all of the actors in that series, you know who I'm talking about, right? Or not?
Sure.
Okay. So each actor had to say which were their favorite piece was. And you could see when they're talking about it, they get enthusiastic. And then at the end, when they say how great Larry is, their eyes shift. Their eyes jump left to right or right to left. Like, they have to say it, and you could see that they're lying. I couldn't believe it. Each and every one of them, when they were extolling their show and how great it was, at the end, their eyes darted to the left or to the right. I said, these people are just outright lying.
That's
and then I said, you're shocked an actor is lying? That's something new? They're actors. What do you expect them to say when the guy pays their bill?
This is why people in general, you should know, who shouldn't be trusted, that's why a lot of them always wear sunglasses in the same way security people wear sunglasses, not to give up what they're thinking in their mind.
Okay, now this is an important point. That's not 100% true. This is a cultural thing, Israel. There are cultures that do not look you in the eye and they're not lying. It's just a very uncomfortable thing for people from certain cultures. I believe it's an Asian thing, by the way, not to look you in the eye. And it doesn't mean they're lying. It's considered an invasion of their soul. You know, the American people are very into staring you in the eye while you're talking. I find it very uncomfortable. If I'm in a conversation, why do I have to have a staring contest with somebody when my mind is trying to think?
Savage.
You know, many of us think that the Obama administration is just literally trampling on the Constitution, especially when we look at the assassination of American citizen Anwar al-Awlaki, a bad guy, but he deserved a trial. At least I think so. Well, joining us right now on the Savage Nation to discuss this is Phil Giraldi, a former officer with the CIA and current executive director for the Council for the National Interest. Phil Giraldi, thanks for the service to America and welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Michael, it's great to talk to you.
The assassination of al-Awlaki is being touted in the media as a great victory in the war on terror. But is it in fact a victory in some ways for this administration and a blow against the Constitution? I mean, didn't the liberals say that they wanted everyone at the Gitmo to have a trial?
I think the answer to that has to be yes, that it's a very minor victory and that al-Awlaki really was not a very important person. But also at the same time, there have to be serious questions raised about the administration's policy of killing American citizens without constitutional process. I mean, as every American is brought up learning, the U.S. Constitution, and particularly the Bill of Rights, is designed particularly and was designed by the Founding Fathers to keep the government from behaving in an arbitrary fashion, either in terms of taking someone's property, accusing them of a crime, or in this case, killing them. So this has to be a serious issue for most Americans to consider.
You write that the administration tried to capture al-Awlaki, but the socialist in chief decided to completely ignore the Constitution and just kill him in a drone attack. What do you believe was behind the decision by Obama to kill him instead of capturing him?
Well, I think it was essentially a political decision, which is really the disturbing aspect to it. I don't think that there was ever any serious consideration to attempting to capture him. The reason given for not doing so was that it would be complicated and difficult and might create difficulties on the ground. But I think, in fact, the real decision was political. The president did not want to have a prisoner who would have his own bully pulpit and be able to complain about U.S. government policies overseas, and didn't want to have to deal with Congress and the media in terms of convincing the public that it would be better to do this in a civilian court as opposed to in front of a military commission. So he had a number of issues he was playing with, and I think he decided eventually that it would be easiest to just kill him, which in some senses might have been a good decision, but we really don't know enough about it, and I think it was made for all the wrong reasons.
Look, as a former CIA officer, you must know things none of us know. Do you believe that it would have been possible to capture him, al-Awlaki?
Well, I can't see any reason why not. One of the things that the administration was trying to do was to basically pretend that this was an all-American operation in getting this guy. But in fact, it turns out that the Yemeni intelligence service and security service played a key role in actually locating him. The U.S. had been looking for him for quite some time, almost 2 years, and had not been able to find him. So there were a lot of wrinkles in terms of how this went on. Certainly, I know my own experience from the CIA. Many of these operations, we call them snatch operations, where you move in with a small team and you strike and you make the person a prisoner. So it is quite plausible to do this kind of thing, particularly given the fact they knew where he was, they had forces in the neighborhood, but they made a political decision essentially to go on another way. And the other way, of course, was to execute him, which of course raises the constitutional issues.
Overall, how do you feel the administration is handling the war on terror?
Well, I'm a skeptic about the war on terror in general. I believe that it's been overinflated by politicians from both parties to make it look like it's something much bigger than it is, and this is largely done to provide support for government spending programs and to support also the growth of government. We've seen a tremendous growth of government and budgets. They've doubled in size since 2001, and the war on terror is the excuse for this. I think that that basically terrorism is indeed an international problem, but it is something that is manageable using normal intelligence resources, police resources, and cooperating with other nations to go after these people. So I think it's something that that basically I would like to see scaled down, and I would like to see Americans in general less concerned about terrorism and less fearful of it.
Do you believe that the Hitler of Iran will try to take control of Iraq, and if he does, what are the consequences of such a nightmare?
Well, from what I'm seeing is what's going on in Iran, essentially it looks like Ahmadinejad is on his way out. The Supreme Religious Council was talking last week about even abolishing his position. I don't think he's the one that's in control of that country. I think you have the Khatami and the other religious leaders are the ones that are much more powerful than he is. I think they'll be playing a very cautious game. They already have a very strong influence over what the Iraqi government does, and I think they will just strengthen that incrementally. I can't see them making an effort to take it over because that would lead to a civil war with the Kurdish region and with the Sunni region. So it's far better for them just to assert their control in a quiet, non-demonstrative way.
What most concerns you about this administration assassinating an American citizen?
What scares me is that the media hasn't really been screaming about this. The fact is he's killed now three American citizens, in fact, including the 16-year-old son of al-Awlaki, and nobody is saying, well, what's going on here? I mean, it's clear to me, at least, that when a government sets itself aside and says that it has secret evidence that it's not going to reveal to you, that puts someone on a death list, there should be a lot of people rather upset by that, because today they're going after al-Awlaki, which we know, I think, correctly, was not a very savory individual. But tomorrow they can go after anybody, and I just don't understand why Americans, the American public, has been lulled into this sleep on this issue, because this is a fundamental issue. The founding fathers, I think, would be rising up in their graves if they could be aware of something like this happening in the country that they had created.
Phil Giraldi, thanks for joining us today on the Savage Nation.
Michael, it was great to talk to you.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
whatever happened to leadership? Whatever happened to authority figures discussing moral issues, issues such as we are discussing today on the Savage Nation? And it's an interesting cultural observation unto itself that it has fallen upon some of us in the media to take up the mantle of discussing issues that really matter to families in America, such as should drugs be decriminalized or legalized? Should prostitution be decriminalized or legalized? This is the issue that we're talking about right now. I stumbled upon it. I didn't plan on talking about it, but we're very deeply discussing it on the Savage Nation. I want to challenge you right now because you're going to be shocked by this. I just found something that I thought was immensely interesting. We're going to read to you the percentage of men by country who paid for sex at least once. In other words, male clients or johns of prostitutes worldwide from 21 studies conducted between 1994 and 2010. Okay? And they included only 15 countries for which they found data of men paying for sex at least once in their lifetimes. Which country, before I read this list, would you think is the highest in the use of prostitutes and the lowest? Well, what's the point of answering? Don't call me. But you're going to be shocked by the answer. Again, it's not a very scientific study, but it's certainly a starting point. The number one country for the use, or let us put it to this way, for men who paid for sex at least once, the John's chart, Cambodia, 80% of men have gone to prostitutes at least once. Thailand, 75% of men have gone to prostitutes at least once in their lifetime. Italy, 45% of men have gone to prostitutes at least once. Spain, 39% of men. Japan, 37% of men. The Netherlands, 21% of men. The United States, 20% of men. China, 20% of men. Switzerland, 19%. France, 16%. Australia, 15%. Sweden, 13%. Finland, 13%. Norway, 12% of men. And strangely enough, the United Kingdom, only 8.8% of men admit to having gone to prostitutes at least once in their life. I guess that's because they're not interested in women to begin with, so it's at the very, very bottom of the chart. And I suppose the reason in Norway that the number of men who go to prostitutes is so low is because they're so high on drugs they don't even want to go to women at all. And then if you look at the chart the other way, Cambodia and Thailand being at the top of the chart, it seems to be endemic or a part of their society to use women in this manner. Cambodian men are quite ready to admit that they seek the favors of prostitutes, even though they may be married and have two or three girlfriends on the side. It's part of their life. That's according to Leela Barrick in Business Times magazine. Thailand. Do I have to talk about Thailand? I mean, but I'm curious about the bottom of the list, which is the United Kingdom. The number of men paying women for sex being the lowest of this group. It's very interesting. Now, the rate of divorce has increased in England, as has the proportion of men who were never or previously married. And this may explain some of the increased demand for commercial sex. But nevertheless, I think the women and their lack of morality in England, by and large, is also somewhat accounting for the low rate of men who go to prostitutes. They don't have to, since so many of the women are acting like prostitutes, in plain English. I mean, you know, one of the things I specialize in is not mincing words. And when you have a society like the United Kingdom where the women basically are all the younger ones act like prostitutes, which is no different than many regions of America. We don't have to spell it out and become graphic and make burlesque-like jokes here. But you know that the Hollywood establishment is pushing the image of women being like men. You know, if it feels good, do it. Why not do it in the road? And many of us are disgusted by this behavior. It also accounts for the fact that the Caucasians amongst us have the lowest birth rate in the United States of America amongst all races. And that is because the women don't want to have babies. They just want to have fun. So let's get back to the main issue. And let's take your calls right here on the Savage Nation. Alice, in New York on WOR, where do you stand? Are you for or again legalizing prostitution?
Gray area. I'm for it to be legalized and regulated. Why? Well, it's like you said before with the disease. I mean, if you look back through history, during the Civil War, a lot of these guys were going out away from home for the first time seeing prostitutes, and the generals were having a big problem because they were losing a quarter of their guys to all the various venereal diseases of the day, you know, before they even got out on the battlefield. And their solution for it was to legalize it and regulate it. And that's what they did. And they saw an immediate drop in disease. You know, they had the prostitutes. They would have to go get a license for prostitution, go to a doctor and get checked.
Well, but here, look, there's certainly an argument to be made for that. But as I mentioned to you earlier, just because they go to a doctor doesn't mean that the next man to be with them is going to be disease-free and not pass, and she's not going to pass it on to the third man, the second man after him.
Oh, well, no, absolutely not. But I'm saying it reduces the chances, you know? I mean, and like you said before, of course, if they're diagnosed, are they going to stop working? Probably not. That's their bread and butter.
No, I hear you, and I'm not trying to be, kind of naive about any of this either. Are you yourself at all familiar with this practice?
Not really.
No, I'm trying to find out if you're in the biz.
Yeah, it's, people are going to do it anyways. You know, it is the world's oldest profession. And if people are going to do it anyways...
Well, sure, and if they get caught, they wind up on CNN. What could be better?
Well, it could be good or it could be bad, you know?
All right. We don't have to make any juvenile jokes about it, but it's an interesting discussion, and we haven't yet heard from the other side to the extent that I'd like to hear from the other side. Whereas it's saying it should not be legalized from the moral point of view, from the family point of view. So let's go to Patricia in Arizona, who takes that side. Go ahead, Patricia.
Yeah, I just, is this going to be one of our daughter's career choices?
If you turn on HBO, it makes it look like it's a choice between becoming a lawyer or a prostitute and working in a cat house.
I work in a school. There's a lot of messed up kids in this world. And is this going to be something that is going to allow our sons to keep abusing our daughters and our daughters just taking that? I don't understand how people can want to do that. You know, that, oh, yeah, one of my first jobs was I didn't work in a fast food restaurant. I worked in a brothel. You know, it's ridiculous. It's really ridiculous.
Well, here's the problem. I don't even think we'd be having this discussion if America wasn't melting down into a third world nation right in front of our eyes. In other words, if we didn't have the debasement of our society, promulgated by so many different forces, and I don't have to name them for us to know who we're talking about, I don't think we'd even be talking about it. 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, we wouldn't be having this discussion. But because we have been debased to the point that we are debased, take a look at the White House. Take a look at how the two occupants of the White House have trashed the White House, debased the presidency itself, abused the presidency. That is why we're even talking about legalizing prostitution, pros and cons. It's because we are very much like a third world nation on a moral level right now. There's no question about that. Texas, Matt, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, hi, Dr. Savage. Yes, I'm against it. And you can talk about disease. You can talk about everything. But what it really boils down to is a person seeks someone outside of their marriage because they're not capable of being intimate. And they get a false sense of intimacy when they seek out a prostitute or someone outside their marriage. Now, it's not always the guy's fault. It takes two.
But you're saying outside the marriage. What if the man is single and cannot meet a woman? Or what if the man is single and doesn't have the time to go dating? Or what if the man is single and is afraid to date someone for fear that she's crazy or out stalking him and he just wants to use someone to relieve him? I mean, I'm laying it online here as though this is a clinical discussion. I'm not taking that side. How do you answer that point of view?
For a guy that's single... I'm not saying legalize it. If that's what he chooses to do, that's his choice. Go ahead and do it. But you're still going to lack the ability to be intimate, and it takes work. I mean, if you look at intimacy between a man and a woman, that's probably the highest form of intimacy that man has been created with and can enjoy on this earth, and it takes work. Okay?
Now, let's talk about this from a perspective that a child can understand, because many children listen to the show. How do you define intimacy?
Being able to share anything about yourself that you're afraid that other people might think you're the normal or unusual. And when you're
And bringing that into the sexual arena with a in a marital setting, for example.
Okay. Son, your dad and mom love one another a lot, and one of the highest forms of love that we express to each other is when we close our door at night and we make love to one another. And it's a very special time. It's the most special time that I have with my wife, whom I pledged my love to years ago at the altar of marriage. And I want you to ask me anything at any time as to how that works so that you can treat your wife the same. Michael, I went outside my marriage, and I lived in sexual sin for a long time. And I went for 7 months to a place to help me learn to be intimate, and I know it's work.
Well, you know, God bless the people from Texas. I mean, you're a straight-up guy, and you laid out a scenario right now that's not commonly discussed. I've never heard it put that way, Matt. You've been through something there to have come out so clear on this.
It's intimacy. It really is. And, I mean, I can ask all your listeners to think about the person or persons with whom that they feel closest to, and they are the ones that have let their guard down and shared a secret of whatever kind it is, and that's a form of intimacy. And the highest form is when you take off your clothes and you love on your loved one, and she loves on you, and at the end you're both smiling and you're happy, and there's no judgment, and there's pure contentment between the both of you, and that is worth the work.
All right, man, you really made a heck of a speech right there. I think you've changed a lot of lives. I appreciate you calling the show. I never thought we'd get this seriously into this, but hey, God bless that gentleman from Texas who really knows what he's talking about.
Savage.